Hello and welcome to Clear the Air with me, Jess.
And me, Kaylee. Let's Clear the Air with Jess and Kaylee will be available on all platforms where you listen to your podcast. The podcast is there to discuss all things personal, mindset, political, female, and a mass of food sharing. So make sure to tune in to us every Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
Bonjour, monsieur. I don't know why I always start it that way.
I just want to be French. Hello, darling.
Yeah. Hello. How are we?
I'm very well. How are you?
Do you want to hear my toilet story?
There's another one.
I've got a little toilet story that I just thought I'd share and then we'll crack on. Right. So I don't know if this will get you or whether I'm just too British. So today went to a lovely little cafe, you know, had a nice, and there's one toilet, which just baffles me in the first place.
Yeah,
but there was one toilet anyway. I saw people coming in and out and I kept missing it, like just as someone would come out, someone else would like jump in, and I thought, nah, this is my game now, I need the toilet. So a little boy went in, his mum was waiting outside, and I thought, I'm just gonna queue outside. So I queued outside, the mum was just scrolling on her phone, and I'm gonna say I gave Kira my bag, so I didn't even have my phone on me, so it was general like complete British awkwardness. I had no idea what to do with myself, looking around at everyone, that sort of thing. I'm really dragging out a very small story. And then I was, honestly, it must have been like 5 minutes, and the mum was just still like scrolling on her phone, and I started like tapping my foot. I was like, what is this boy doing in there? I was like, well, he's obviously doing a shit.
Falling down the toilet.
Yeah, exactly, we definitely know he's doing a shit. And and then I kind of, you know, looked at her, and then she kind of like knocked, and she was like, William, are you okay? He was like, yes, I'm okay. And I thought, oh, here we fucking go. So then carries on, just scrolling back for her phone. I'm telling you, 10 minutes went by. Like, I was busting for a wee. I must have had about 5 cups of tea by this point. No. I am busting for it. Straight in, straight out. So then I was like looking around, and I was like, well, this is taking the mick. Of course, got nowhere else to go because there's one toilet. So then she knocks again. She's like, William, are you okay? And he starts speaking. She's like, I can't hear you. And then I looked around and the dad like came storming in, and he like knocked, and he was like, William, let me in. And I was like, oh my God. And he was like, sorry about this. And I was like, no worries. Anyway, he went in, and he was like, right, to the wife. He's like, go get toilet roll. He has no toilet roll. It's a bombshell in there. And then the mum just walks out and just stands in the queue. Doesn't even like jump to the people like making coffee and that to get a toilet roll. She just stands in the queue like nothing's happening. Like there's no one there waiting. And I just thought, you know what? I'm out, because I am desperate.
Don't want to go in there.
Exactly. But at this point, I'm not going in there. I do not want to know what that little boy has been
up to. It's a bombshell. No, I don't know.
But then I had to use like a public toilet, and it was just gross, and there was like no soap. And anyway, that is such a bit. It really frustrated me.
Yeah, I mean, if you need to go, you've got to go, right?
I also just thought of the mum. I was like, why were you stood outside the toilet for so long? I don't know. I was just like, there's no common sense.
That bugs me when, like, I see, I mean, I shouldn't really comment because I'm not a mum, so I don't know, but I've got my nieces and nephews, and when I would ever look after them, I'd always be very, you know, on top of things with them.
Yeah.
But it's almost like lazy parenting when you see they're just sitting on their phone and their kid's running a riot, and you're like, mate, like, they're going to smash something in a minute. You're in a public place. Like, you know, I get the how difficult it is on airplanes and stuff. I'm not talking about that situation. But, you know, when you're in a cafe full of people and then the kids just tripping over the waiters, doing, it's like, come on, like, get off your phone, stop being a lazy parent.
Oh, yeah, literally. And, like, I think, you know, my parents are very much like, you sit and you have your dinner and then we go home and you play at home. Like, restaurants aren't a play zone. Yeah. And I think once I probably took
the piss. If parents paid attention and was giving their kids attention, they wouldn't be doing that. If you're sitting on your phone, you're not really parenting, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Or, I don't know, I'm a bit funny, and I know, I think that I understand iPads, and I'm sure when I'm a parent, I will use them and they will be a godsend when I'm losing my absolute
head. Of course, I agree with
and
that.
And I need something.
But then the kids don't have that, and the mum's on the phone or the dad's on the phone.
Exactly.
And it's like, your kids are craving attention.
Yeah.
Like, they're bored. Interact with them.
Exactly. But hey ho, there you go. Just thought I'd tell you that story, just to, you know, brighten your week.
Open it up.
open the floor up to imposter syndrome.
Yeah, and that's how we do it.
We just like to have a nice transition, you know.
We do. Spot on. I was looking, because when we spoke earlier and you said about imposter syndrome, I was looking at some quotes because, you know, I love a quote.
Oh yeah.
And I read an imposter syndrome quote from Dr. Margaret Chan, And it said, okay. There are an awful lot of people out here who think I'm an expert. How do these people believe all this about me? I'm so much aware of all the things I don't know. And I thought that was lovely, because I think that's part of being better at what you do, not ever thinking you know everything.
Yeah.
And always been able to learn. And I think, if anything, that can help any type of imposter syndrome, by knowing that we, as humans, no matter, even if you're like a Nobel Prize winner, you still don't know everything. And I think the mentality of people that normally are very successful, it kind of comes from a place where they know they don't know everything, and they're always curious.
Yeah.
So they're always curious to know more. So they could be brilliant at their field and they know exactly what they're talking about. They're always willing and prepared to know more. And I think that's a very was a really powerful quote.
That's an amazing quote. And I think also, like you just touched upon, like a Nobel Prize winner, well, they're only an expert in a very small part of science, or, you know, whatever their specialist field is. It's the same as, you know, I feel personally that I'm kind of what's that phrase? Like, I'm good at a lot of things, but I'm a master of none. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like there's quite a few things that I'd be like, oh, I'm all right at that. But like, I'm not a master of that, whereas somebody who's got like a Nobel Prize winner is an expert in that, but maybe doesn't have a lot of knowledge with other things. So I feel like, but I mean, realistically, all of us go through some sort of imposter syndrome. I don't even think just in work. Like, have you ever been kind of, I get this quite a lot, I think I have quite bad social anxiety, where I stand like a party or something, and I have massive imposter syndrome. Like, I feel like, you know, I've got no one here who's my friend necessarily. Like, I feel like I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not funny. Like, no one wants to hang out with me. And I think that's definitely a form of imposter syndrome, where you just feel, yeah, again, like you don't belong.
Yeah. And I understand this, because taking it back to the simplest things and to my career. I remember when I was first got on, I think when I was filming Strike, they picked me up in my car and I was like, oh my God, I'm in a car. I've been picked up, taken to a trailer. And I thought, yeah, but what if people find out once that you modeled or did reality? Yeah. Oh, you shouldn't be here. They're going to laugh at you. They're going to kick you off. And it was constantly going on in my head.
Yeah.
So I put on a front being like, oh yeah, theatre school, and just completely ignored like about an 8-year period of my life to try and pretend it didn't happen. Yeah. And then even to take into the little scale of it, I mean, today I was walking in a furniture store. Mm. My partner went to the toilet and I was walking around. And then I kind of thought, why am I walking? I thought everyone's looking at me. What am I doing? I'm being a weirdo, because I'm just kind of hanging around a stall. And I was like, I don't really need a stall. So people are going to think I'm a weirdo. Why? And all these things are through your head. Yeah. Like, what on earth is my brain doing right now? So you have to like take your step back and be like, no one's looking at you. You're walking around a fucking furniture shop looking at furniture. Yeah. Like, most people do that. And then I think, oh, I think I'm stealing. How am I going to steal a sofa? Like, come on, Jess, stop being ridiculous.
Yeah, I get it all the time. I did it. I did a series 3 years ago. I did like an ITV series, and I did it for, I think we filmed for just over 6 months. And I had such bad, and I do put this into imposter syndrome, that basically when I get like really socially anxious, I don't get it as much now, but I just sweat just from my armpits.
Me too.
Nowhere else. Oh my god, same.
I get this bad.
Yeah, and it's not general sweating. I'm not actually hot. It's just if I'm really nervous, drip, mate. Yes. So I did this period drama. As you can imagine, it was the tightest outfit, you know, like 4 layers, you know, corsets, everything. I had to get costume. So we basically go into our trailer. So I get picked up, go into the trailer, and I asked costume to add padding, because to allow me to sweat, basically. They kind of they sewed like, you know, sweat patches. Well, we were on a night shoot and I'd sweated through these patches. Mm. And I remember there's a scene, I can still see it when I watch back the series, where I hold my arms really close to me because it was a night shoot and I couldn't get costume to do anything different. So I just knew I had these sweat patches. So for the rest of the, I think I had 5 months left, I used to get to my trailer extra early. I used to go do hair and makeup. Then I'd cut a sanitary towel in half.
I use that.
Yeah. And I have like the, you know, the tape you get from Boots, like the skin color tape.
Mm.
And I would tape half a sanitary towel to each of my armpits. Mm. I'd do the shoot. I wouldn't sweat. And then basically I'd run back to the trailer before costume came back to undress me to take like the corset and that off. And I'd quickly grab the like pads, put them in the bin, and then do the same. And that was literally 5 months I did that.
And it's I totally get that. I've had that so many times. And it, you know what? I had it. I think I spoke it in the last episode when we kind of talked about, we did a little bit about me. And you were saying, you know, I'll tell you about how I used to go bright red if anyone spoke to me, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like led on from that. So even now I could be shivering, freezing cold. And if I'm feeling a bit out of sorts in myself and not feeling very confident or getting, you know, the imposter syndrome, that will happen to me. And I'll have to put certain things like you said, cut up a sandwich and put it in underneath your armpits. And it's like, it's all from anxiety. So
it's
not one I've mastered yet. It's
no,
not one
neither
I've mastered
have I.
It's
no.
physical.
It is terrifying because you feel so out of control because you can't help it. I remember the first time I had it was when I was 16 and it was my, I did like a training course and you had to go audition in my college years. And I went and did this audition and I was so proud. My mum used to be really funny about purchasing items online. She wouldn't do it. So we went round to her friends so that I could order a special like leotard with a skirt on it for my audition in like turquoise. And it was so low cut. Like it went, you know, it wasn't one that was up under your armpit, it went lower down. And I remember I had to wait 2.5 hours for my audition. Like I was one of the last people to go in. And I remember taking my jumper off and I had sweated so much that it went all the way down. And I remember going into my audition and having these sweat patches. And I remember crying and sobbing that night because I remember going in and I did my dance and the ballet director was like, "I'm so proud of you to do that and to go through that when you're going through what you are." And I just felt like, I think I felt like for the next 2 years, that person is just going to see me in a certain light because I walked into my audition with massive sweat patches. Like there's something about it, isn't there? And we are in a culture. I don't know why we've gone into a whole thing on sweating, but we do live in a culture where sweating's disgusting. Sweating's, you know, like sweat march, you go, bleh. Like it's not exactly kind of.
So then it gives you more anxiety on the fact that that's happening and then it doubles
then it
up. So it's like,
and I tried, Kieran had it a bit when he was younger, when he was going through puberty, and they gave him, you know, the kind of really strong deodorant that kind of cuts your pores off. And I did use that actually. Yeah. I did use it when I was like 19, 20. And to be fair, it bloody worked, but then you kind of get scared, don't you? And I stopped using it. So yeah, I've not mastered it at all, mate.
Like one thing I try to do, like, so I know I've got something stressful, like a conversation that might be difficult. So I've worked out breathing. Because that kind of what I learned not that long ago actually was the way we breathe manifests our fight or flight syndrome within us, but it's little thoughts that can trigger that off.
Yeah.
So I think I spoke once about breathing and I read that book by James Nestor about the breath.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know when I'm feeling a bit anxious because my breathing goes funny. So I think, okay, I'll give myself 5 minutes and just go and do some conscious breathing.
Yeah.
And one thing I've kind of worked out, like the other morning I woke up with some serious anxiety and it, you know, the whole day kind of went shit show. But to calm my body down, because I can feel my heart go, I can feel everything go, then I feel the sweats. But even though I'm shivering, my body will be shivering because I've got something on my mind. I'll tremble. I don't know. I think that's from younger when obviously domestic violence was going on, but my body will tremble.
Yeah.
And I'm still sweating, but it's the breathing that can control my body. So your mind, you kind of have to shut it. It's difficult to shut up when you're in that state of anxiety that leads to the sweating and the stress. But if you can kind of work the other way, well, I normally say from the inside out and I sort your mind out, sort the rest out. But when your body's been so tailored to a certain way, your body reacts to how it knows, even if you're thinking, okay,
it's subconscious.
This is not that, I'm safe.
Yeah.
And your body will go straight into it. So if you can get the conscious breathing, just 5 minutes, I even do the Wim Hof app, the breathing, or even like in yoga, they tell you to like restrict your throat. So you breathe and you can hear yourself breathe in and you hear it go out.
Yeah.
When you can do that, it tells your body you're safe subconsciously. I didn't know this, but something I learned. And I tried that the other morning and actually it worked.
My
heart stopped pounding. So my thoughts may have still been going a bit nuts, but my physicals, the heart stopped pounding, the sweat stopped and the trembles stopped. So I think there is a way of kind of getting out of that. And it is the breath.
Yeah.
I think we all shallow breathe. Like I think most of us shallow breathe and that's stress inducing. And we don't even realize we do it. So I think we should all try and do some conscious breathing at some point in our life, especially points where, you know, there's a lot going on and you're feeling a bit stressed.
Yeah, definitely. I used to like distract, so I always used to use distraction. So if I was feeling anxious, like I'd get into a conversation with somebody about like normal everyday things, and then I'd find that 2 minutes later I'd think about it and like my armpits were dry. Do you know what I mean? Like it was kind of that it was the minute my brain went on something. But yeah, like you say, I still struggle, and it's embarrassing because in our industry, when you go on shoots, you're not in control of what you wear. You get put in whatever, and it's yeah, it is really stressful. I always really panic when I have costume fittings that it's going to be something where I can't put a towel underneath, or that it is going to show me like sweating. Because I always think back to the UK office, it's really random, and Martin Freeman in one of the scenes is like sweating for his shirt, and I don't know why, but it always like stayed with me. It's probably because I thought about it in terms of myself. But yeah, I get quite bad like social anxiety. And on that shoot, there was, you know, it was an ensemble of kind of like 20-25 cast, all incredibly talented, and a lot of them more, you know, older and more mature and a lot more experienced than me. And yeah, I don't know, I think I get imposter syndrome in many aspects of my life, like whether it's work, whether it's, you know, even at times, I suppose I love this podcast, and there's probably been times where you've discussed such as like all the books you've read or kind of the work you've done on yourself. And I think, oh, fuck, I haven't done all that work on myself. Maybe I shouldn't be here. Why am I doing this podcast? I'm not experienced enough for it. And then I think, well, no, there's a reason why we're doing this. We are, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's funny how much work you kind of have to put into yourself to stop your brain telling you you don't belong everywhere.
Yeah, and I think your brain likes to keep Mel Robbins, another, I just, this is the thing as well, I'll sit here and I'll talk about other people, but it's I've learned from them. And so in a way, I feel like I'm impossible.
It's not you,
it's all stuff I've learned from other
people. But it's not you, it's me. It's like, but that's it's incredible that you've done that. And like we discussed in the episode last week, that is, you've done so much work and listened and read and watched other people, that you've done that work on yourself. And it's not a representation of you. It's just what it's your brain does it. It's just.
Yeah. And I don't mean that like I meant as in like, I would feel like I'm just parroting everyone else. And I'm like, well, who the hell am I to say this? And then I'll do things like, I'll sit there and I'll be like, you know, if I'm having a down day, I'm like, but I don't, when I talk on my podcast, I can talk about how I would go about that. But today I'm not doing very well at doing that. And I had that literally this week. I was like, when I told you I woke up in the morning, my heart going, I was like, well, I talk about these things and these tools that I use. Why am I not using them today? Yeah. And it's like, that gives you a bit of imposter syndrome. So I'll come on here and I'll speak about it, and I'll be like, but I didn't use that last week, so who am I to tell people? But I think it's just the collective that we all know it can occur at any time, but everyone's doing their best, you know, everyone's doing their best at what they're doing, and as long as you're doing good and not hurting anyone,
we gotta
feel in ourselves that, you know, we're doing well enough and we are good enough.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? It's kind of like you're sourcing yourself. It's like as you speak, it's like you're writing an assignment. It's like you're going, I found that source or that part of what I used from that person.
And that's why I always say their names. I'm always like, oh, this person, because I don't want someone to be like, plagiarism.
Someone's going to mark it and be like...
Exactly.
No, it's crazy though, because I think, but then, I don't know, I've met people in life, and I'm sure we all have, where I think they do not suffer any imposter syndrome. You know, like there's some people that walk in and they own that room, they own that space. And I think, is it just blatant kind of confidence, like fake it till you make it, like they have got it? Or do you think that maybe generationally now we're kind of shown on, I don't know, social media, TikTok, all these lives of people who are smashing it or are saying that they're great at everything or they've got everything materialistically, that we all then feel more kind of imposter syndrome, more like frauds in our own lives?
I think everyone feels it. And I think if you say you don't, it's a lie. Because again, when I listen to people that are smashing it and doing well, most of them that I listen to, if they're being honest, they say, yeah, I get it all the time. Who am I to say this? But it works. What I'm doing is working for me. So I'll try it for someone else. If it's working for them, there's clearly something here. And then you've got to kind of tell yourself that. I just got my phone out because, I was looking at quotes. And even Michelle Obama, she said, I still have a little imposter syndrome. It doesn't go away. That feeling that you shouldn't take me that seriously. What do I know? I share that with you because we all have doubts in our abilities about our power and what that power is. And it's like, you know, Michelle Obama, first woman of the United States of America, one of the you know, most powerful jobs in the world alongside her husband. And it's like, she's getting it. I don't think there's a you know, unless you've been doing something so long that you go on stage and do a TED talk, it's your first one, I still think you'd go and do that. I think even 10 TED talks down, people will have that. And it's about showing vulnerability. And I think showing vulnerability also helps other people with that imposter syndrome. So like, okay, they did it, I can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, my dog's just entered the the podcast. She's being taken away. There you go. Apologies. No, I completely agree. I think it's, I suppose, maybe for anyone listening, they're probably thinking, well, you've spoken about imposter syndrome, which we all go through. You've spoken about how it can be like in socially and work environments and things like that. What steps, if any, do you think can be taken to help you if you're in a situation where you do feel like an imposter? I mean, we've spoken about, well, you spoke about breathing in terms of when you have physical signs of that. Like, I think one of my physical signs of having that feeling is kind of sweating and things like that. But what other things can people do, maybe more in terms of mindfulness or meditation or kind of mindset as to how they can not feel like a fraud when they're in a work environment or a social environment?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of self-belief, because that's one thing that really changed my world around. Like, now I can, my imposter syndrome was so bad when I was younger, I would pretend I was sick even if I wanted to do something. I knew that would help my career. I'd pretend I was sick and wouldn't go. Whereas now I'm like, I had to do all that work and kind of figure out my mind, and doing that, giving myself that love, giving myself that extra care that I would normally put into someone else, you start to believe in yourself, because you start to believe you're worth it.
Yeah.
And I think you need to believe you're worth something to be able to have it. So it's kind of going that deep before you can go up. You got to go deeper to come out the top.
Definitely. I remember actually, I used to get, when I first started out, when I was 18 from Bath, I couldn't afford to get the train. The train was like £50 return. And that's quite a lot when you're like 18, trying to go for auditions and opens and stuff like that. So the coach was only like £12 to £15 for a return. So I used to get the coach, but it took like 3 to 4 hours there and 3 to 4 hours back. And I remember getting the coach once, and I used to come in at Victoria and there'd be a Costa. And I remember I was so nervous for this audition that I sat at the Costa. I got a caramel shortbread and a cup of tea. 2 hours later, I still sat there. I just refused to go to the audition. I just sat there, and the minute I decided I wasn't going, it was like a breath of fresh air. It was like, no, I can decide I'm not going. But it wasn't, it was just, I knew fear. That because I'd had that feeling of walking into auditions and feeling like I shouldn't be here, like everyone else, like warming up, legs up by the heads, things like that. And and I had this like sigh of relief. And it's scary, because it's amazing what you can, you know, just me by myself, no one else was there. I made that decision. I'd gone all the way to London to sit at a Costa, pay an extra £15, change my coach and come straight back home. And it's amazing what you can tell yourself or convince yourself or send yourself down a rabbit hole. But completely, I think self-belief is a massive thing. Even if, let's be honest, like when I walk into a room, I am probably not the cleverest person there, or maybe, you know, I'm not like what I would classify as the best person stood there, but it's not about that. It's about knowing that you're worth being stood in that room.
Yeah. And the thing is, a lot of people you'll find, like, there's always going to be someone bigger, better, more beautiful, more intelligent. Even for the people that we think are the best, there's still going to be someone out there that can come and throw that part of you out the park. But what they can't do is bring who you are and your individuality. So now, if we go back to like an audition kind of mindset, because we can understand that, it's like, if I go in there thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm not good enough, oh my God, I'm scared, I'll go in there and I'll do a terrible audition because I've talked to myself that I'm not good enough, I'm not this. If I go in thinking, I know I'm a good actress and I know I can do this, I'm going to be fine. And I'll have that, you know, if I've found now through seeing this part of myself, and 9 times out of 10, if I just talk to myself in the opposite way, if I see myself going, you're not going to get this right, you're not going to get this right, I won't get it right. If I sit on there, even if I have fear of it, and I just go, no, you're good at what you do, they're going to love you, you know, you're a nice person, you go in there and you do it, and try and take the control of those thoughts, you'll go in and you'll do a 10 times better job. But it's controlling those thoughts, and it can be done. It can be done. You've got to have that discipline in your thoughts, the discipline to say, no, you're not going to get the better of me today. And like, you know, that's what we do when we go into these new jobs. That, you know, acting is like going to a new school every time, because you're off from your next and you're meeting everyone new, and you kind of all have to get your friends there and stuff. And when you're going in, of course, what we must remember is every single one of them people is going to feel the same. There'll be a few crew mm-hmm. that know each other, but everyone's got to get the feel of everyone. And at the end of the day, you got that job or you got that audition or you got whatever you got because you were good enough in the first place.
Yeah.
And so no matter what, you've got to hold on to those little things that are the spark, because that's going to give you a better chance of doing what you do. And it's natural. And also remember, it's natural to feel these things. It's natural to feel like you're an imposter in something. I mean, I feel like an imposter in my own life half the time, so it's like, you just got to discipline your thoughts. And that's one thing that really changed my mind. And as I say, the other day I didn't, and I felt that spiral and it really went down. I mean, I was sobbing at nighttime. I was sobbing myself to sleep and I didn't discipline my thoughts. So you can change things around just through discipline. I think people think self-discipline is a bad thing. It's like, if you're disciplined, you're in trouble. You know, oh, that kid's naughty, he's going to be disciplined. But actually, if you discipline yourself, it's the biggest form of self-love. And I'm quoting Will Smith, because, you know, obviously a quote. You know, you're giving yourself a green light for a better future. If you say something's easy right now. So I'm sat here and I think, oh, I've got this big audition tomorrow and I've just got the lines in, I'm panicking, blah, blah. Okay, I can either sit and panic about that, or I can sit and do my best of what I can do and go in with a mindset of I'm going to do my best.
Absolutely.
I've disciplined myself that I've got a green light for the future, that I could get this job or I could get this whatever outcome. Whereas if I didn't and I'm sat there spiraling thinking how bad it could go, I've given myself a red light.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And now I can't. And I know I'm going to go in there. I know I'm going to do crap.
Yeah.
Because I didn't spend the time that I was worrying. I didn't put it into what I could actually do with that time.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, I think Will Smith probably has to do a little bit more work on his self.
I know. What? You let me down, Will.
I know, he let us all down, bless him. And I think a big part of imposter syndrome as well is not seeking outside validation. And I am horrendous. Yes. I am so, so bad for this. Like, I do seek validation in terms of somebody being like, you're doing really well. And I'm like, yes, I fucking am. I'm actually on top of the world. I'm absolutely fucking smashing it. Thanks very much. But the minute someone goes, so for example, I get it quite often with like school friends, why aren't you in the next Spider-Man? Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. And it's like, I've done nothing for the last 6 years. Do you know what I mean? I may as well have just
like, oh, you'd be good in this. Have you tried it?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
Like, I would have loved it.
Yeah. Bridgerton. Oh, I've heard they're making 7 more series of Bridgerton. Yeah. Bloody hell. You want to get yourself a role in that? Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. Thanks
I'll
so
just
much.
Be on my way and just
I'll just knock on the Bridgerton door. Yeah. And the minute something like that said, A, it makes me madly angry and I instantly want to be like, like that. And also it just, it makes me feel like, yeah, I may as well just be sat under my duvet every day. What's the point of doing everything if, you know, no one gives a shit? But who cares if no one gives a shit? I'm proud of myself. And I think
I
a big thing that I do, because I know that I seek out, even right, my best friend, bless her, she says to me every week, love the podcast. She always listens to it straight away. Love the podcast. And so I wait for it now. And if she hasn't said it in a day, I go, did you like the podcast? But bless her. I love it. I love her more than anything. Well, not more than anything, but, you know, I love her a lot. But like, you know, what does it matter really what she thinks? You know, I'd hope she'd enjoy it but it doesn't technically 100% matter, does it? I'm not doing it. I'm not making a podcast for her, am I? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's, and I think a big thing that I've tried to do to help with how I struggle with validation is when I have those moments where I come out of a social event, or, you know, I've been sat with a friend and they've made a comment about the next Spider-Man or something, is I go home, I normally hit a pillow or have a little cry or just rant to Kieran, and then I'll kind of take myself off by myself and write kind of 10 things that I know I've done or I'm proud of myself or that I've done. Because I think sometimes we don't reflect enough. And I don't know if this is industry specific or for anyone, including whatever you do, but sometimes we're constantly on our little hamster roll going over and over, and someone goes, what's next? What are you doing next? What are you doing? When are you doing it? That you're constantly on to the next thing, getting stressed and more stressed. And you actually never, you find it hard to look back. That's why it's lovely when we do this podcast and we tell stories of our childhood or kind of share struggles and things, because then it gives you that moment to look back and go, look at the growth, or look what I've done, or look what I've achieved.
Yeah.
those moments that actually 10 years ago, I wouldn't think I'm where I'm at. So yeah, I think
we forget to look back a lot of the time. And we always told, you know, keep going to the future, always never look back because it will hurt you. But actually, I think a lot of the time it is very, very valuable to look back to see where you've come.
Yeah.
And then you can also get a grasp of what you need to change now, because what are you using from your 100%. Past that maybe doesn't serve you in this present moment? So there you can actually, you can weigh up, you can get the scales balanced if you do take a look back at how you used to behave at things. Or, you know, I look back at myself and I'm like, my coping mechanisms back then were very different to now. Like mine would be hit the drink, go and party, get attention from guys. You know, that's going to make you feel validated until the next morning when you feel like dog shit. But now if I'm feeling down or something, I won't touch a drink because I know that's not a good thing for me to do. It doesn't mask it. It stays it still, so that when I have to sober up and deal with it, it's 10 times worse. Yeah. And, you know, you probably do something stupid in that time and cause something even a bigger ruckus, you know.
So I'm a horrendous drunk. We've never seen each other drunk.
No,
I'm I don't think we'd be trusted as a duo drunk, because from the sounds of it,
we'd end up in Hawaii or something. Yeah, like, exactly. How do we get here?
Yeah, I don't make sensible decisions when I'm drunk.
I never did.
They used to call me Crazy K because I just I don't know what it was. It was like, I think it's everything we're talking about. I think all my insecurities went. I think all of my imposter syndrome went the minute I had, it was about two glasses of wine, it would go.
Yeah.
And I'd just say whatever I wanted.
Yeah, you're on top of the world.
Whatever. Yeah, like, who gives a fuck? Like, like, absolutely. And it's got me in so much trouble over the years.
Yeah.
So much, you know, and led me to, you know, I think we could probably do a full podcast episode on drunk stories and where you end up and the guilt the next day and head and what you've done. And but there's a certain level where I used to use it. Like if I had meetings or, you know, in this industry, you know, when you go meet and you go to events, I'd rely on having a glass of rosé because I knew it'd loosen me up and actually make me someone. Whereas without that kind of, you know, Dutch courage, I felt like I wasn't, you know, I'd just stand in the corner away from everyone, not really wanting to talk to anyone. So it's a really strange one, but I think, and I think what you mentioned about people saying not to look into your past, but I think even if you look back and actually you're not at a good place now, it's good to look back to see what your goals were, where you were at, what you wanted to put you back on track. Or maybe sometimes you look
completely
back, do you know what I mean? And go, actually, I've gone really awry here. What's happened, you know?
And that's kind of like what I was talking about last week when I was saying how that period of time when I was in my 20s,
I
had to come back from that, my end of my 20s, back to when I was young, because, like, well, what did I value? Who was I? What was my actual personality? What did I like? And then the middle bit, I was like a chameleon, being whatever I could to fit in with this person or be like that person and act like that person, dress like them, everything.
Yeah.
And then I come back forward and I'm like, I was none of those things. So when I look back, it was so valuable to learn what actually I did like without, before I had all the traumas going, what I valued, what I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, what I wanted to give to the world. And so when I look back, I could find that again. So it's, I do think it's a good, valuable thing to do, to be able to look back, because it can either change, it can change your life.
Yeah. And you did that in such a short space of time, really, like go full circle. Whereas you find a lot of people, that's why people have midlife crises and things like that, because they realize they've been sat in a job they hate for 30 years. Do you know what I mean? Or in a marriage or wherever they are. And then they end up, you know, buying a sports car or, I don't know, getting a divorce and going through all that at such a later point in life. Whereas you, you know, you reflected, self-evaluated, and you did that in such a short space of time. And now you're living the life that you wanted to from when you're a teenager and from when you're a child. So yeah, I think we've always got work to do, haven't we? I mean, exactly. I take people's opinions on weight. Well, I get mad. Do you know what I mean? Like, I kind of, like I say, like, I remember, and this is really selfish, and you're either, you'll know what I mean, or you'll think, Hayley, you're being a twat now. So we were at a New Year's party, and obviously me and you went to watch Encanto, didn't we? And it's a lovely day. And it's the first thing I'd been to like that, really, because I don't really go to stuff like that. I go to more to like independent screenings, things like that. And it was cool because it ended up being, you know, around that Christmas period, it was in all the charts, wasn't it? Encanto was like the number one Disney film. Yeah. So it was cool to have been there before other people saw it, that sort of thing. And I've got a friend who works on trailers, and she did the trailer. I'm really going in on Spider-Man today. She did the trailer for Spider-Man, and we were sat at this New Year's Eve party, and it was kind of a guy I've not liked since school. And he was like, oh, that's so cool that you worked on the trailer. Did you get to go to the like premiere? She was like, no, unfortunately not. He was like, oh, how cool would like a premiere for a big film be? And then she just ignored me. And I was like, I know you follow me. I know you know I went to the Disney thing. And you know when like, and it is so selfish and it is just seeking validation. It's just for him to say, oh, that's cool. And me go, it was really cool. Thanks so much.
I think a lot of the time, because that was me. I was very much like, well, hang on a minute. And I couldn't bear it. But what I've kind of done now is it's like, fuck them. It sounds awful,
yeah,
doesn't
no,
it?
I'm with you.
Fuck them. I don't. Yeah. When I started to do that, and sometimes I'll catch myself when I'm trying to seek validation elsewhere. Yeah. And it's normally if something's really triggered me, like something
you did
this
week. Yeah, something else is going on. Yeah.
Yeah, something else is going on. It triggered me, and I put up a picture, and I think, oh, yeah, I'll put this up. And I'm like, oh, that's outdoor seeking validation, Jess. Yes. And I'll catch myself. But when you stop doing that, you get, it's like a fuck it attitude. And I'm sorry to keep swearing and saying that, but I do feel like Sodom. Like, you know what? What I'm doing is for me. And as long as I feel happy with it, I don't care anymore. And it's kind of a freeing feeling. But it's, as I say, sometimes these things pop back up and it's just life. It's this wave that goes round and round and round, and we'll learn and we'll think we've nailed it. And then something else will test that now and you'll fall to pieces and you'll be like, oh crap. But then you learn again.
Funny.
And then you learn to move on. And
It is.
The world's never going to be an easy linear thing we just glide through. It's more like, Everest going up, down, you fall off one cliff, get on the other. It's never going to be. And I think when we accept that, when the shit times come, like I've had a shitter the last few months. I think from the beginning of this year, I mean, I take the silver lining. So I'm buzzing that I'd got that BBC job. And I'm like, to me, that's my highlight. And that overshadows everything because I loved it so much. And that's how I try and keep on to the things that are good and really cling on to them. But for the whole year, there's been something, and it's been one
underlying
after the other, after the other. And I'm like my friends, one of my best friends, she's a doctor, and she was texting me like, are you okay? You need to really look after yourself at this time because you've got a lot going on. And I'll tell you about that another episode. But I'm like, I really do have a lot going on right now. My head is like, it could really explode. But I'm like, I know for a fact from childhood to now, there's been a lot of shitty things. Like we spoke about in my last episode, there's been a lot of shitty things and they pass.
Yeah.
And then another one will come. So it's just learning the resilience from the other ones to deal with the new ones. And then, you know, one could be even worse than anything and you're going to crumble, but that's how you build yourself back up. And it's how you look after yourself at that point.
Without a doubt. I saw, I'm sure you've seen it as well, the Tom Hanks, like table talk. And he was like, at some point you have to realize this too shall pass. So right now you're going through the worst time of your life. You know, you feel like everyone's against you. No one understands you, you know, everything one after another, this too shall pass. But also right now you feel like you're on top of the world. Everyone gets you. Nothing could be better. Everything's correct. Love, life, like work, socially, this too shall pass. It's like nothing
that
lasts.
Was powerful.
Exactly. Like it's I really didn't do justice, but go watch Tom Hanks. He did a
great
job.
No, you did. It's exactly it's the things, they come and they go. And
exactly like you said, Everest,
every
up and down. Without a doubt. And I think, you know, for anyone listening, we're not here to have all the answers. As me and Jess have said, like Jess has done so much work on herself. I've done so much work on myself, but also family members who I've seen go for a lot, who I've taken care of and helped. And, you know, we just want to chat, talk about what we know, our experiences, and if we can help and even give anyone, even if they come away listening to this half an hour podcast and go, I feel better today. And even if it's for today, that's great. Like, even if, you come away and you get that boost. Yeah. Go on.
I feel like that when we talk, we have that. It's like, it's not necessarily, I'm not sitting here saying neither of us are psychologists, neither of us are anything like that, but you know, just talking out the things that we've dealt with, it helps. And I think, you know, when I listen to podcasts similar to ours, or you know, anyone about the topic I'm interested in at that time, I come out of listening to it and I feel relieved. I feel like a weight's off the shoulders, and that's just the main thing, sharing, caring.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's what we're here for. Isn't it?
It is.
It is. Woo. Gee, we are terrible at ending a podcast.
I like it. I like our awkward podcast ending. It's us.
Well, thank you so much, guys. I hope you I like this episode because I feel like it's nice when you talk about something and you're able to bring in both of you so much of your own personal experiences. Or even this episode talking about the sweating thing has been such a kind of sordid secret of mine that even you straight away going, me too, just made me feel so yeah. much better and so much calmer.
Yeah.
And we've never discussed that in
no, never.
Kind of our friendship. Never
I
once.
I didn't know
that's
so
why
I was like,
yeah, literally. So even that will really stay with me now, and I'll yeah. probably bring it up to you most times I see you. But like, I don't know, it sounds silly, but you, until you dive into these things and you have these discussions, you don't realize how much you share in life. And I think that's a big thing.
And I think if you speak to people about it, most people, if you're going through something, you can say something, they'll be like, oh, me too. And I think that's a thing we forget. Most people are, like I said, life's Everest, up and down.
Yeah.
And people are all having that. It's not just, it doesn't just go solely to one person. It's to every single person on this planet.
Without a doubt. Ugh, there you go.
We're all in it together.
Oh, I love this episode.
Me too.
Danke. All right then.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Thanks for listening. See you next week. I love the fact you wave.
I know, we're not even sending
this. Goodbye.
Thanks to all our listeners, and we will see you next week.
We'd like to say a special, special thank you to Audio Boom for distributing the series, and Poppo for our jingle, and Raspberry for the series.